on a monthly basis, we see more than $5 million coming from Upwork alone, and they are less software engineers. We've seen more content writers, more of translator, more virtual assistants freelancing on Upwork and earning this money. For us to be around for long, we have to prepare for it from day one. I believe one of the ways to really learn is when you build something with it. And the first thing I did was, I have this idea. What do you think about it? If you want us to proceed, we share like an NDA, the all sign, and then I share the entire Google Doc. And we started from there. I started looking at my weakness. I'm more of a tech person. If I'm starting a new company, I need to look for someone that has done marketing. I realized we're able to achieve a lot together.
Talk to us about your fundraising journey, particularly those earlier rounds. Looking back, is there anything that you would have done differently?
I live in Africa, grew up in Africa. I've experienced the problem. Payment is about trust and compliance. The tech aspect is very minimal. If you can get the trust and the compliance right, you are ready to fly.
When you started Rainest, what would you tell yourself if you had to go back?
Okay, super excited to have Victor join us today. Now, Victor's building a fintech on a mission to revolutionize payments for the remote workforce. He had a background within engineering and has experience at companies like Candela, Jumia, Acumen Fund. And today we're going to hear all about his journey and how he just raised $11 million for one of the leading fintech funds, QED. Victor, tell us how you were a young, obsessed engineer to where you are today. What was those early beginnings like for you?
Thanks, Yvonne. It's a pleasure to be here. Right from when I was young, I've always had interest in anything related to computer. I'm always curious to know how things work. And that's where the passion to become a software developer came from. And I think that pushed me to learn things on my own. Thank God there is Google. You can easily use your mobile phone to like search for anything. I think growing up, there are couples of websites I do visit to know how can you browse for free? How can you do different things online? And I was curious, how were they able to create this website and they are passing information to us? And that's when I realized, okay, there's something called blogging and they have to create a blog website. I started researching. That pushed me to start blogging. And then at the point, there isn't for me to customize my blog. And then I realized there is something called HTML that I need to use in customizing my blog. Then I started researching, what is HTML? How can I learn it? And I discovered W3C School. That's how everything started. I only had a mobile phone then. I think one Nokia phone then. And then I started learning on W3C from HTML to CSS to JavaScript. And that's how everything started. Then before I enter into the university, I already created a website that was functioning. Or immediately I entered into the university, I was studying electronic engineering. There was a setback on the software development aspect that I focused on learning. But during my youth service, I was lucky to work with some couples of guys that just graduated from university as well, and they just started their own company. So I would say they inspired me as well. And everything started from there and started moving, learning new things from web development, mobile development. And that's how everything started. And I think when I joined Jumia as a senior software engineer, that also provides some level of exposure to see how is payments working across Africa. I joined Jumia when we're building the fintech aspect of Jumia, Jumia Pay, Jumia One. I was lucky to lead their technical integration in three major African countries, Nigeria, Ghana, and Egypt, from there to Andela and then Acumen Funds.
Interesting. Okay. I'm curious, did you have community growing up? Because I also loved computers as a child, but I also felt like it was quite lonely. Did you have communities, I don't know, groups that kind of encouraged that, or was this more just you navigating the world of software engineering? What year was this, so that we place it in time?
Yeah. I think the first time I learned HTML on my phone, I think I was in SS1. I just finished my junior secondary school, and then I was in SS1 then. Then I think we only had two cyber cafe because internet was not readily available. We only have two cyber cafe in my town then. So I have to travel for 30 to 1 hour to the nearest cyber cafe to like make use of it. So there was...
And the idea of cyber cafes is not a common thing. So for people who don't know, cyber cafes then were just places you had computers and internet, and we would all go there and buy time, like 30 minutes, 1 hour, and you could use a computer with an internet. So you had to travel 30 minutes to go there.
Yeah, and I do that at least three times in a week.
Wow.
It's a good day and learn to research. And that time, it's like there was no really community. I think the only community there, and I remember, yeah, is this online forum where people can post question, what they are trying to do, what's the challenge, people would reply. So there was a forum there, and I think the Geek NG, that's the only community I can say existed, and it was online.
Interesting.
I'm always curious, given that you've worked at Andela, Jumia, Acumen, what were some of the key learnings from your experience working within the corporate world or within the operator space? And at what point in time did you know that you wanted to build?
Yeah, so I would say all the places I've worked, they actually have impact on my career and how I do things. They are places where you learn about culture. They are places where you learn about global standard. They are places you learn about payments beyond just a single country. The first place I worked when I moved to Lagos was more of like a cryptocurrency platform. And that's my first introduction to what's a blockchain, Bitcoin, and the likes. And this was around 2016 thereabouts. I'm not like the Web3 areas, but I think that kind of gave me beyond normal banking payments. There is another way people are doing payments, and I joined Jumia. Jumia made me realize payment is beyond Nigeria. And then I was lucky to work with couples of people that are very experienced, so they passed some knowledge down to me as well. Before Jumia, Juspay, please. I'm a curious person, so I want to know how things work. And I believe one of the ways to really learn faster is when you build something with it. So before Venest, I've built like two products. I remember I did Boomav. Boomav was meant to bridge digital marketing. It's like a platform that is bringing together publisher and advertiser, a way you can make offline marketing to be digitalized. So meaning you want to post advert on billboard, on the street. You also want to push to TV station, radio station. Just with a single click, you can push to others. So I did Boomav. I think it was that project that actually got me the job in Jumia. That's what I showed to Jumia chief marketing officer. Then this is one of the projects I worked on, and I built it end to end. Unluckily, I was unable to launch Boomav, but it was a process for me to learn to build something end to end, and it's a complex product that I built then. After that, I built something else like Quick Gas. Quick Gas was meant to be like Uber for cooking gas, bringing together a gas vendor if your gas is down. In Africa, most time when your gas is down, you have to take the can out to like refill. So I wanted to solve that solution. So I've always liked to build solutions, but after the Quick Gas, I realized it's beyond the building, because when you build, you need to get it to the hand of the user. Then I started spending time on product management, product development, and looking into the business side. And then I realized for you to launch a company, most time it can be a one-man show. I started looking at my weakness. I'm more of a tech person, product person. If I'm starting a new company and select co-founder, I need to look for someone that has done growth, that has done marketing. So there is always this dream of I'm going to build something, but probably not the CEO, maybe just like the tech guy. But I always know from day one that at a point in my career, I will start something.
But you are the CEO of Rainest, so I would love
Yes,
to
yeah.
understand the transition there. How did you, where was the kernel of the idea that Rainest became, and at what point did you take the leap?
Yeah, the bulk of my career has been as a remote worker based in Lagos. Working, even while I was at Jumia, I was working remotely with their tech team in Porto. Andela too was the same. Acumen phone was the same. So I've always been that remote guy. And at the point I was trying to apply for a job, the only reason why I was able to get a job was because the company wasn't sure of a reliable way they can pay me in Nigeria. When I joined Andela as well, we have a Slack channel. The name of that Slack channel is Sell It. And whenever a new member joins, we have engineers from Ghana, Kenya, Uganda, Nigeria. And whenever we have a new member, there is always like three questions. How can I receive my payment faster? I need to create a USD bank account. The only option then is you have to create a domiciliary bank account, which will be issued to you by a local bank in Africa. And then the only way through which that bank account can receive money is SWIFT. So you still have to wait for 2 to 5 days. It's still very expensive. So I see a lot of people complaining about it. And I face the same challenge. To open a domiciliary bank account, you need 2 or 3 people to sign for you to have access to that bank. You need to put a minimum of $100 initial deposit. Then people really ask, I have $3,000. Is there anybody with the equivalent local currency? So buy and sell foreign currency and local currency was actually going on the Slack channel. And then I realized that this is a major problem solving for it. A lot of focus has been on Africa in diaspora sending money to their friends and family. But we have people in Africa visiting foreign currency that are struggling with it. So that was like the first time the idea came to my mind, but I didn't do anything. I just noted it down. I joined Acumen Fund, the same challenge as well. I was managing team that were in Ghana, Kenya. They will all have to send their invoices to me manually. Now take it to the finance team. They will now have to process the payment through Swift. Most time they will reach out to me. I'm here to receive my money. That's like the second time I experienced it. That's 2 years after. Nobody's here to suffer it. And then I realized that at the point I was using my friend bank account number to receive my salary. So they will pay to his bank account in the US. He will now look for a way to use MoneyGram or whatever means to send it to me. It might take 2 to 5 days to like receive payment. And then I realized that close to 15% of my salary has gone into the cross-border payment fee, the unfavorable exchange rate. They're doing COVID lockdown bank. You can't go to bank to like withdraw because the way it works is the money will go into my bank account in Lagos. I will go to the bank to like get the dollar cash and then go to the street to look for people that will help me exchange the money to my local currency. But during COVID, this was impossible. And that's when I decided this problem needs to be solved. The first thing I did was to put together like a Google Doc on what I think Venice is going to be all about, how Venice is going to change, and then start looking at who are the people I can work with. There was not to be the CEO, just want to be involved in building it, let it happen. But at the early stage of every company thing, only you can at the early stage you will understand the dream better because it's your dream. And then it's a risk to say, oh, leave your work, come, let's start training. So I have to take a lead at a point to, okay, we need to get this done. I have to resign from my job, and that's how everything happened.
I love that. And I think one of the things I find so interesting, first of all, you had real lived experience of the pain point that you were solving for. And then just how you said that you didn't really see yourself as CEO. But if you look at some of the best entrepreneurs today, Elon Musk, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, they are all engineers and great CEOs. One thing I'm just curious about is just how you went from being that operator software to transitioning as a CEO.
Yeah, so I believe in the idea. I knew it's a big problem and someone needs to solve it efficiently. And the person that needs to solve it needs to understand the problem and understand the market. I live in Africa, I grew up in Africa, I've experienced the problem. I've seen how we are solving the problem manually. Same with my other co-founders as well, Richard and Saud. That makes us the best people to solve this challenge. On realizing that we need to do this and I need to lead this, one of the things I did is to learn how to transition from just being the tech guy to be the person that will be the CEO. A lot of learning need to happen. What are the mistakes I need to avoid? Building a company involves fundraising as well. I haven't done that before. What are the books I need to get on fundraising? Write couples of books on fundraising. Be smarter than your lawyer and VC. That kind of gave me idea into different terms that I wasn't aware of before. And then I start looking into people that have transitioned from being an engineer to actually be a CEO. Those were like the step I took then. They actually helped me. I would say it's been an interesting journey. It's a journey where you have to learn fast. There's no time to like delay. Yeah, those are the things I did then.
Let's talk about how you met your co-founders. You mentioned them both, and you mentioned that you didn't think you'd be the CTO or CEO, given your technical background. How did you decide who would solve the problem? Because it sounded like you were very deliberate about these are my strengths. Who do I complement with me for us to make a complete team? How did you think about that? How did you have that conversation with them? And how do you split responsibilities and roles?
The good thing is before Reyners, I've known my two co-founders. I joined the company in 2015 and I met someone there. He was already working there. And I think he was my onboarding partner then. And we just noticed that we click, we were like roommates for 6 months. And then after some time, he saw an opening online. There was a job opening in Lagos and he shared it with me that Victor, this company is looking for a software engineer. I think you have everything. I might be missing out something. He shared with me and I applied. That's how I got a job in Lagos and I moved to Lagos. He moved to Cyprus then for his master's, but we keep communicating. His name is Sod. is now the CTO at Redis from 2015 to now starting Redis in 2021, meaning we were still keeping in touch, still share ideas and discuss. When I moved to Lagos, I joined JustPay, that's the name of the company then. I met someone that was in their marketing team, though we were not in the same department. But during the time I was there and he was doing the marketing, I realized we were able to achieve a lot together, engineering and marketing partnering together. And that person happened to be Richard, 2016. He was doing marketing there. And I left that company to join Jumia, move on. It means from 2016 that I met Richard to 2021 that I started Venice, we were still communicating. So when I was trying to think about who are the people I need to work with to build Venice, when I've realized that you need to sell the market, you need to sell your product, you need to market it. There is a good aspect of it. Which I left JustPay, moved to OP, moved to Fair Money, moved to LeFi. It means he has been involved in growth in this company. He was like head of marketing, digital marketing there. So I realized, okay, Richard has been in fintech. He has experience about neobank. He has experience about cross-border payments. I've known him for a while now. He was the best man at my wedding as well. Meaning there is the relationship aspect. He has the experience as well. He should be someone that needs to come on board on Venice for us to build Venice. And if I'm not going to focus on tech in 2 or 3 years to come, then someone needs to be able to manage the tech side. That's where so Dudin joined. And the first thing I did was, I have this idea. What do you think about it? Just give a brief summary. If you want us to like proceed, and we just share like an NDA and a document, they all sign. And then I share the entire Google Doc about Venice. And we started from there. This was.
And I guess at that point, it was during the COVID period. And I know that the impact of COVID was slightly different, Europe versus Africa. One of the things I'm curious about is because I know that ultimately you're solving for some of the pain points that remote workers face and global employers. But how has the company evolved over time? Because I know that it has evolved quite significantly since we met back in 2021, 2022. So talk to us about that journey and evolution, because oftentimes you start out with a vision and changes come along the way as entrepreneurs. How did you navigate that? And how has your ambition changed since you started out?
Yeah, thank you. Good questions. We started by being an employer of record, meaning companies that are based abroad that need to hire from Africa, they don't need to register in Africa. We help them with the entire statutory payment, tax, and every other thing. And then we launched Venice in 2022 as an employer of record. But with time, we realized that the people that are actually feeling the pain are the people that are receiving it. Those are the remote workers that are based in Africa. With the employer record model, we have to go about the employer that are based in US, that are based in UK. And a lot of them are in contractors that are based in Africa. Meaning there is less concern about the statutory aspect that they need to pay tax, they need to do this, because they are contractors and the contractors will handle those payments themselves. If I'm working with a company in US and they've processed my payments, it's not their fault again if the payment has been delayed for 3 to 5 days. The people that are feeling the pain is that freelancer that is based in Lagos, based in Accra, that has to wait for 5 days to receive the salary or have to look for a way to convert their local currency at an exchange rate that is not good. And that's what we thought about. Can we reverse this solution? Because if your product is not solving for pain and it's just like an additional... So it might be difficult for you to sell. And we noticed that if we're talking to companies in US and UK, I think to convert them is taking a lot. We also noticed there are some similar solutions that are already big in US and Europe. There was challenge in terms of getting these businesses. We also realized couples of investors as well, they are not ready to go against these big competitors that are already there. Then there are likes of Remote, Papaya, Multiplier, a lot of times that they raise millions of dollars. So investor would say, oh, do you want to go against this guy? I don't think we can invest in you. But that was not the major determinant for us. It's because we were struggling to convert the businesses that we are trying to onboard. And then we reversed the solution. Rather than going after the businesses, why can't we go after the people at the receiving end? So we started onboarding the freelancers, the remote workers, and now focus on the payment aspect. Because anything that has to do with money is a major headache. and people need access to their money ASAP
I'm
without any
compassionate
delay.
about it, also sensitive. Things can go wrong,
Yes, yeah. So when I switched the model, you are based in Egypt, you are based in Nigeria, anywhere. Venex can make it possible for you to get paid in minutes and not days. An ability for you to be able to spend that money instantly and convert to your local currency. So what we did was to automate the manual way I solved the problem when I was freelancing as well. I was using a friend US bank account number. They would send money to my friend. They would look for a way to send that to me. Can we make it possible for someone in Nairobi to be able to have access to a US bank account, to a UK bank account, to like receive their salary? What are we doing? We are localizing that payment. So if I'm working with a company in UK and Venice has given you, Victor, this is a UK bank account number in your name, give it to your employer in UK. When they make payment to that bank account, it's a UK to UK transfer. It's instant and it's cheaper. What we need to do behind the scenes is to find a way, how can we easily reconcile this payment and it shows up on your dashboard within a few minutes as well. You have the pounds, but you'll not spend pounds in Nigeria. You will not spend pounds in Kenya. You need to convert to your local currency. Would that make it possible for them to be able to convert to their local currency to their local currency at any time of the day? Either midnight, meaning even if there is a lockdown, you can still have a local currency and spend. That's what we switched to. Within 3 months of that change, we're able to onboard over 80,000 users without any advert. It shows the product is effective. It's solving the problem the way it's meant to solve it. We are giving remote worker freelancers new level of experience that they've not seen before. And when you have access to a bank account, it's just a means for you to like receive. Then when I started adding other things to it, you will not just receive the money and hold on to it. You have to spend, you have to send. And then we started laying different type of solution on top of it. Can we automate your invoicing that you don't have to send your invoice manually? Can we make it possible to like reconcile that invoice and then you have access to the money? And today, Venex is a global multi-currency bank account for Africans, either for the consumer or for the businesses. 2024, we realized that the problem that we are solving for freelancers, remote worker, businesses in Africa are facing this challenge as well. Because we started seeing some businesses signing up as freelancers to like get a US bank account. Then we launched the B2B aspect of it, where we provide multi-currency business banking for African businesses.
Yeah, I love it. I have so many questions. One thing I wanted to touch on was just for a multi-currency digital bank account, you do need certain partnerships to be able to make this happen, especially partnering from a high-risk jurisdiction such as Nigeria and Africa. I would love to learn your tips and pretty much mental models without giving too much of the secret sauce to building the infrastructure that allows you to build that trust with these partners to offer your services to your eventual customers.
Yeah, it was a major headache back then. I think that was like the first thing we have to do. You go to bank, okay, where are your customer base? They are based in Nigeria, they are based in, oh no, we can't serve customers that are based in that region. And payment is about trust. That's like, payment is about trust and compliance. The tech aspect is very minimal. If you can get the trust and the compliance aspect right, you are ready to fly. So what we did, one, we kind of look at what are the best way and the standard way of onboarding customers that are based in high jurisdiction area. If you onboarding people from some country that has been seen as high risk, there's you are doing beyond KYC, right? You need to do extended due diligence. You need to look for a way of doing risk rating for all these customers. We realize that these are the things that will make the bank come comfortable. And at that early stage, our goal was not to serve everybody. We have set of users we want to serve. And we have to define the set of users we want to onboard. These are people that have jobs with company in US, in UK. They have a contract. So those set of users now, the bank know the source of funds is from a company that is based in US. And then whenever we are talking to banks, one of the things I always do is to use my story that I'm based in Lagos, yes, but I was working with a company in US. This is the company. And the company is paying me this amount of money, but I struggle to receive the permit. I have my W-8 bank form signed that shows that I'm exempted from tax in the US. These are the set of people we are trying to solve for. These are the numbers of people that are facing this challenge. This is how big it is. This is the benefit for you as a bank. This is the benefit for us as Venest. And this is the way we onboard this set of customer. This is our compliance process. We have a complete BSA document that shows are we on board, are we screen, are we perform a risk rating. Yeah, but with others, not all banks will be ready to like work with you. There is an approach I like to use when it comes to partnership. If my plan is to work with probably a community bank, right, I will not go directly to that community bank. I will look for a big bank that's connected to that community bank and reach out to that big bank. Yes, I know they will likely tell me we can work with you, but most time they will tell you, okay, reach out to bank A, they will likely work with you. Because the intro is coming from a bigger bank, they will pay attention to you. I think that's one of the things we did, and it worked. It has worked couples of times for us as well now. And we are very solid when it comes to compliance. We invested in compliance at the early days. I think at the early days, we were paying around $0.75 to like $1 just for KYC and verification, which most companies would say is expensive. Yeah. But we want to be around for long. The idea is not to build a company that will be around for 1 year, 2 years. For us to be around for long, we have to prepare for it from day one. We don't want to start a product today and tomorrow we tell you that we have to stop because our banking partner, they are not working with us. So we started investing in compliance, fraud monitoring, understanding our user, and then our banking partner risk appetite.
Amazing. I'm curious to hear about your fundraising journey. Obviously, you've just closed on the Series A round and you raised a pre-seed. I know that you obviously raised a round after that as well. Talk to us about your fundraising journey, what that was like, particularly those earlier rounds. Looking back, is there anything that you would have done differently?
Yeah. First time founder, raising pre-seed. Started raising pre-seed in 2022. And when things have started changing and raising fund is not that. Take 5 million there, go out and do whatever you want to do. It's not just about idea. So one of the things we did was to ensure we have a product before we started fundraising. Mm-hmm. At least we have something going on. And then before readiness, no relationship with any investors, with any VCs. I think two things I did. I reached out to two people without having any relationship with them. I reached out to Yvonne on Twitter, DM, if you remember. Yeah, it was Twitter. And then I reached out to...
There you go, Sanders. Twitter... Whatever way you want to contact me.
Yeah. So that's what I did. And then I reached out to Ola Oyetayo of Veto.
Oh, yeah.
On LinkedIn. Just normal code DMs. And then luckily for me, the two of you replied. You connected me with June. Ola connected me with Olumide Soyombo. Olumide Soyombo connected me with VP. So I look at people that understand that we likely understand the problem. People that are already in similar sector. All I was doing, Veto is more of like cross-border, but focus on businesses. I think I read an article about you as well, the Wise Journey. Okay, these two people, we easily understand what we are trying to solve for. But we ensure we have a product. I think we have one or two people that are already making use of the product. So we started the conversation. The other thing that I helped is to look for, I was at Acumen Fund. I know Color Ventures Platform was at the time one of their board of Acumen Fund. Richardo has been at Opel and Fi. So look at who are the investors that have invested in these companies that we've worked with. It really creates some form of connection and make the conversation easier. Probably if there is something I would have done well, probably with a smaller proceed.
Really?
Yeah. Why? Yeah, probably with a smaller proceed. I think we closed our proceed when we were already doing around $40,000 monthly revenue, right? And then raise a seed as well. Probably raise a smaller hand at us at a period because we ended up not using majority of the fund before the next one because of the level of growth we experienced there as well.
There was no way to predict it. It's kind of catched.
Yeah. And then I don't like fundraising, so raising smaller and my biggest scale as well because I don't want to go back to the market in 6 months or 8 months.
Yeah.
I needed to focus on what is important for the Series A. Luckily for us, we were able to get good investors, not in terms of the money they've given to us, but in terms of the communications, the support, and then them understanding what we are trying to build. I can easily reach out to any of my investors and I will get a response as early as possible, well, email, WhatsApp, or any other means. I believe it's a partnership, so we need to be able to work together for this to be a success. So when we were planning on raising Series A, both of our investors helping preparing us for the Series A, these are the things you need to have in place. Maybe these are the way you need to structure your data room. And then They did intro as well. But one thing we've always done is, if I'm talking to you doing proceed and you tell me no, that's fine. It's normal. If I know that you can do a seed round, right, maybe every quarter or every 6 months, I will send you an update. So I'm keeping you updated about our progress. So when it's time for me to proceed and I reach out to you, it's not a fresh conversation. It's more of, let's resume from where we stopped.
Yeah.
We did the same thing at Series A.
Yeah.
I remember doing our seed. We had a conversation with QED then. Just know our intro, yeah, but they didn't invest then. But I keep sending updates 6 months, quarterly, and they're saying, okay, these guys are making progress. When it's time for Series A, we just resume the conversation. I think it's the same thing for almost all investors that are in the round. QED lent the round. Noskin was part of the round as well. And then we have investors that has been with us from pre-seed that they are still with us in our ventures platform, P1 Venture, Seed Stars, people that invested in the pre-seed that still invested again. The idea was to raise $8 million, but we have to increase the round size because of interest and then wanted to bring in a new set of investors on.
If an investor says no, that may just be a no for now. And so yeah. It's really important that you don't burn that relationship because you never know what the future may hold.
Yeah.
You're talking to your Series B investors too.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask on the fundraising, what was the difference, would you say, between your pre-seed, your early round and your growth round? I would say is the early stages of growth round. Were there any marked differences? Because there's often the nuance of early stage. There's not a lot to see. It's really on the team, but then the conversation changes at growth. Any mental models that were maybe surprising to you that you would have prepared for earlier, tips for people to have top of mind?
Yeah, proceed was more of like the team as well. I remember Olumide Sowore said, okay, if this idea is not working, I believe because of your background, right, you can actually switch and build something else. And truly, the idea of employer of record didn't work. But within few periods, we're able to turn things over and then reverse the solution it and still started working. So proceed, there was less focus on either what's your margin that you're getting in terms of what. It's more of like the team, the product, and then what's your plan on how to make it big. And then that was more on like the proceed stage. So there was less focus on focus on unit economics, what's your path to like profitability, all those things, right? What's the problem you're solving for? What's your solution? How are you better? And then how do you plan to like win the market? Do you have the experience, the domain knowledge of what you're doing? And then seed stage for us at seed, when we were raising seed, I think we were already cash flow positive. There was no question on, oh, how much are you burning money in? Because our cash flow wasn't positive. I think the focus on now that you're already doing this, how can you 10x this? What's like the path to like get it to 100 million ARR, 10 million ARR? That was more on the focus. And then how can you bring in more capital brands? Who are like the set of people you need to bring on board to get you to where you need to get to? On many team structures, and then talk on the compliance, on license as well. Because as fintech, you definitely need to get license. You need to be compliant as well. And then Series A, yes, there was a lot of focus on, yes, you're making money, but what's your take rate, right? What's your LTV? What's your payback period? What's your CAC? So you need to understand your business in depth, which of the feature is actually bringing you more money, because there are many features. There's a bank account, there's a card, there's like the payment aspect. Which one is actually driving your revenue? Are you going to mitigate risk that might come from FX? How do you plan to replicate this beyond one country, beyond two countries? Then how can you get your number of users to this level, number of your revenue to this particular level? Who are the people that will help you scale this company to the next stage? So there was a lot of focus on that. And then because the period we raised fund, I think it's like a difficult period. So we've gone beyond stage of less DD. The DD was actually rigorous, but we see it as an avenue for a gap analysis. That's the way we approach the DD. So there are things we need to improve on. We just noticed that down. And now we are working on, these are some of the gaps that has been identified during the DD. Doing the investors that we work with as well, they made it easier for us as well, because it's more tech DD. These are the things we've seen, financial DD, commercial DD. These are the things we've seen. These are the things we think you can improve on, and we all work through it. Yeah, this can be improved. We can set like a timeline. I think we can get this improved in 3 or 4 or 4 months.
So just curious, shifting gears a little, or thinking about the future of work and talent in Africa, global companies are increasingly hiring African freelancers, and obviously this presents strong tailwinds for what you're building. What are the predictions that you have for the African remote workforce over the next 5, 10 years?
We've seen a lot of changes in the past few years. I think when we started Venice, we only noticed payments. Like, we do ask people what's your occupation. We only see more software engineers as people that are signing up and receiving payments. But now we have different type of people, right? I would say today, on a monthly basis, we see more than $5 million coming from Upwork alone, and they are less software engineers. We've seen more content writers,
Interesting.
more of translator, more of virtual assistant, product designer that are freelancing on Upwork and earning this money. And then we are now seeing payments coming from the digital sector side, the content creation side, right? We see payments coming from YouTube. We see payments coming from TikTok. It shows it's now beyond, I'm a coder, I'm a software engineer. We are seeing more of any work you can do remotely, people are hiring from Africa. And we'll continue to see that more growing. I think time zone has been a positive one as well for people that are freelancing in Europe, UK, because the time zone is closer as well. So we'll continue to see more of that. At the point when I was everywhere, like I was thinking there's going to be a negative impact on the number of freelancers, gigs they are getting. But so far, we've not seen a drop. What we've seen is more of them utilizing AI. We are seeing more of ChatGPT subscription because we have a card as well. So we can see that a lot of people that are freelancers, they are paying monthly subscription on ChatGPT and other AI tools. We've seen them pay more on cameras. It means they are just using the AI tool to enhance their freelancing. So that will continue to happen. And I see Africa being a major workforce globally. And one of the challenge that will happen is what we are already solving for, the payment aspect, so that you can hire from Africa, you can pay them without challenge, right? You don't have to walk to your bank and carry cash because you want to pay a freelancer based in Nigeria.
I love that. One of the things I wanted to ask you, because this is a common trope in the world that, local founders cannot build global products from Africa. People believe that sometimes. And you are born and bred. You went to Futu Minna, is that correct?
For 2 minutes there.
And you were a self-taught developer, and now you're building a global company that's moving millions of dollars, serving corridors across the world. What would be your response to the statement that it's harder to build as a local founder building a global product?
It depends on the motive behind the company you're building. I think one, you need to know from day one, am I building a company to serve? Okay, there is this term of the unbank in Africa. If that's the motive, then definitely you have to build that within your country. But really, our idea was not to bank the unbanked. We just want to really bank the people that has been banked in the right way. And then we want to put people in control of their funds wherever their journey takes them to. So if we are saying that if people journey have to take them to US, to like UK, then we have to be there. And our product has to work there. So we know that from day one we have to build a company that can work anywhere. So we started structuring Venice to be able to be in that way. Definitely there is where exposure will come to play. Because if you want to build a solution that will work in UK, that will work in US, you need to understand how payments work in UK. How payment work in US. It's different from the way it works in Nigeria, in Ghana. In Africa, we have instant payments. But within a few seconds, you have your payment. In US, if you use ACH, you have to wait for it. It can take 1 to 2 business days. Domestic wire can take between 2 hours or 6 hours. So you need to understand that. But if you want to build for global, you need to understand the global market as well. So there's a lot of inputs that need to go into it. But I believe a lot of, as we have in Africa now, a lot of builders, they've turned this global even before starting their company. Right. So they've been involved in building global solution that has given them the knowledge. We've moved from a stage where someone without the domain knowledge will start building solution. You can look at the top companies we have in Africa today. All the founders, they've done something before. They've built solutions that are working with different companies. So African founders, we can build for global markets. And we are seeing more of that. We are seeing African companies expanding to Asia, expanding to US, UK, and actually winning there. It shows we have what it takes, the knowledge. I think resources is changing as well. That has always been an hindrance, right? If you're African founders, building a global, beautiful market, you need more funds. There is still some struggle in raising that bigger funds you need to be able to build globally. I think that's one of the challenge. It's not even about the founders. Funding, and then there's still some trust issue, which payments and which startup generally payments, it's all about trust. But we are seeing that narrative changing now as well. So with support from people that have done it in the past as well, support from the local VCs that are connecting to global VCs as well, they can help African founders to be able to build globally as well. And I'm seeing a lot of interactions between, okay, like UK, Nigeria now, there is different communities, there is different things that is bringing UK and Nigerians together that is making it easier to navigate this global market. I'm seeing that movement too across UAE and Africa now. Those are the things that are happening. Policy is changing as well, giving African founders ability to build and sell to the global market.
Yeah, I think we're getting to the end of it. And usually, except you have any question, Yvonne? No, okay. So at the end, we love to ask some retrospective questions just to take you back a bit. When you started Raynest, as you got the idea, as you started building the company, what would you tell yourself if you had to go back? Imagine maybe Victor was listening to this podcast 5 years ago. What would you say to yourself? 10 seconds, something very quick will serve you, would have served you if you knew that earlier rather than later.
I would say use your data more.
Elaborate.
I think it's something we realized after a year that we started putting so. At the early stage, you just want to build and launch, right? A lot of building, launching new things. But maybe we pay less attention to the data. And then once we started paying attention to the data, we know, okay, this is what we are seeing. This is where payment is going to from our platform. It means our users are spending money on this platform. What's that platform offering? Can we actually keep the spending within our platform as well by offering something similar? Okay, are we having challenge with our users? Is it that they're having challenge with ID verification, tracking every aspect, and use that data to make informed decision? But we're too busy at the like the first 3 to 6 months. You are building, running after investors. Maybe we should have paid more attention to that data at that stage.
Oh, that is powerful. And then in terms of resources, you mentioned some books earlier. Were
Yeah.
there any specific books, 1, 2, 3 books, so that we can include them in the show notes when people watch this?
Yeah, the first one I read when we started fundraising, it was all about be smarter than your investors and lawyers. That was something that was new to me entirely, so I needed to read about it. I think that helped me a lot. And in the past, when I started getting familiar with payments in US, to know what's the history behind US payment. Yeah, there is check, there is card, did everything started. There was a book, I'm trying to remember the name, that kind of talk about the history of US payments. Because if I'm going to play in US, I need to know the history. How does this work? I can't remember the name of the book now. And what I did after going through that book as well, I bought 2 copies, gave one to my CTO, and then our recently I have VP of product as well, just to see these are how this thing work. If we are doing XYZ, this is why we are doing it. But the one I can remember is be smarter than your investors and lawyers.
I love that. But no, Victor, thank you so much. It's
Thank
been a
you so
great
much for joining.
conversation. So many gems shared, and I'm sure our viewers are going to find it very useful. So thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Marianne, and it's good to be here.
Awesome. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Leave a review. Tell us what you think of this episode on all of our platforms at the Startup Leap Pod. Do you have a question? Ask us, and we'll ask our guests. Go to thestartupleap.io. See you next time.